Well, let's start today with developments in Brussels. Belgian prosecutors are saying that one of the airport suicide bombers was Najim Latraoui. He's also the man who made the bombs used in last November's Paris attacks. Belgian law enforcement also conducted raids in several parts of the country last night and today, arresting at least six. And in France, the interior minister says police made arrests there that may have foiled another plot that, quote, was at an advanced stage. So there's a lot going on, but let's take a moment to take a step back and look at the broader network of people that surround or surrounded the Brussels attackers. Freelance journalist Joshua Hirsch wrote about them in a recent piece for The New Republic, and it focuses on Mohamed Amri and Hamza Attu, the two men who picked up Salah Abdeslam on the night of the Paris attacks and drove him back to Belgium. So, Joshua, how do these two men fit into the broader picture of the terrorist networks operating in Europe?
These two guys didn't go to Syria. This is according to their lawyers, but that's just a fact. And there's been no indication from Belgian authorities that they did. They weren't radicalized, as far as the lawyers say. And as far as people who knew them or people like them, these kind of people come up over and over again, people who are involved in crime. And I would argue Salah Abdeslam fits into that to some extent too. From what we know about him, he was a drug dealer who ran a bar. He'd been involved in some criminality. He'd been in jail. Never went to Syria. And it's quite possible that these are people who really aren't terrorists in the sense that we think of it, but they're just roped into it because a friend calls someone who they know from the streets or from the neighborhood and says, I need you to do me a favor, don't ask any questions, and you do it.
Yeah. So this is interesting because obviously we're not saying that there isn't a concern about foreign-trained fighters or profoundly radicalized people, but this is the broader network that you're talking about, that it sounds like it's informal, it could be made up of people who don't really know what they're getting involved in. I mean, you spent some time in the neighborhoods where these folks live. What else did you learn?
First of all, I don't want to say that by driving a getaway car for a man who is involved in a horrific terrorist attack in Paris, you're innocent. That's obviously not what I'm saying. And at the same time, we clearly have people who have returned from Syria, very, very violent, psychopathic, whatever you want to call it, nihilistic, ready to kill anyone who comes in their way and ready to kill themselves for it. For it, by the way, whatever that it is. But quite violent. There's no question about that. But we're seeing a whole other category of people. And to understand them, and this is what sort of came to me as I spent more time in this neighborhood in Molenbeek, which is really the neighborhood in Brussels where so many of these people are coming from, but also, incidentally, just the neighborhood where so many of the North African immigrant families are living. That's really the reason why we keep hearing about these neighborhoods over and over again. You have to ask the question of that you'd ask in any other community. Why does someone fall into a life of crime? Why does someone fall off the grid? Why does someone lose their hope that there's a system that might allow them to achieve things in life? That's the question that helps you get to the bottom of how we end up with so many people in these ancillary roles. People who feel isolated, people who feel like there's no possibility of advancement in life, a whole bunch of things. And some of them, of course, are more inclined towards criminality and violence than others.
Now, this makes me wonder if the people who are involved in these ancillary roles, as we've been talking about, are also potentially a way in for investigators and authorities to sort of break into these networks and these cells. Because, I mean, if they're criminals, they should already be known to the authorities.
That's exactly right. And they're a weak link too, because where we expect to see and we hear a lot of talk about encryption and secret communications and all the high-level complicated things that a terrorist cell would do, we don't see that with a lot of these guys. These are guys who don't use fake names. They rent apartments in their own names. They have police records. They're known to the police. And this comes up over and over again, even with some of the people who are blowing themselves up. So we see this from the Lakraoui brothers, who are two of the people involved in the most recent attack in Brussels. They both had police records. They were known to the police. They weren't exactly hard to find. So the question is, what's not happening here that needs to be happening as far as police work in terms of understanding who are the people in these neighborhoods? How do we track the ones we need to track? How do we build informant relationships with people who might actually not be totally committed to terrorism and might be even appalled by some of the stuff they're involved in? And how do we also build better relationships, we being the Brussels police, how do they build better relationships with community members, because there's many, many of them who are totally disgusted by what's been going on where they live.
Hmm. But so, I mean, I hear a call there for more good old fashioned police work and on the ground investigations. But I mean, just recently there was reports from the Belgian media that there are examples of this not happening. I mean, local police back in December of last year may have had information or did have information about a relative of Salah Abdeslam who they worried was becoming radicalized, but they didn't share that with Brussels. And it turns out that Abdeslam was arrested at the address of this relative. So, like, there was a 3-month period there where maybe something could have been done if that information had been shared.
Failures of communication in these kind of matters are as old as time. But this is almost more incredible because we're stepping out of the realm of intelligence gathering and international state relationships, and we're just looking at one country, one domestic police force, and their inability to do what I would consider to be very basic things like check on a cousin of a man you've been looking for 4 months who has a police record, has actually been identified as potentially falling into the community of some radicalized people or terrorist-type people, not checking on his address. And it turns out Abdeslam, again, following this theme of not particularly taking terrific operational security, is apparently living at a house that is registered in his name. I mean, we should be seeing better police work than that.
That's freelance journalist Joshua Hirsch. He wrote about the Belgium terrorist attacks for the New Republic. We've got a link to his article at our website, hereandnow.org. Joshua, really interesting to talk with you. Thanks so much.
Yeah, my pleasure.